Welcome back to the Nutrition and Life podcast. My name is Lisa. I'm your host. And in today's episode, I'm speaking with physiotherapist Dr. Samantha Gervallo, aka Doc Sam Moves. Samantha and I spoke about why stretching is the worst thing you can do when you feel tight, why avoiding pain is making it worse, and the importance of recovery for gains. If you like the show, please subscribe and give us a rating or share the episode with someone who might find it helpful. Thank you so much. And as always, if you want help with your nutrition and fitness goals, we are your go-to coaches. Just hit the contact link in the show notes. Now, on to my conversation with Samantha. Samantha Gervallo, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me, Lisa.
It's my absolute pleasure. I really think you're doing such fabulous work with all the message that you're spreading. And I believe as a physiotherapist, it's really, really important to also look into strength training and to teach people that that is a great way to prevent, but also to cure some of their pain. So I'm really excited to have you on. And just overall, thank you for making the time. I'd love to hear what you're excited for the listener to learn from our conversation today.
Yeah, so I'm really excited. What I see a lot with especially female athletes or just active women, I refer to all my clients as athletes. I really want you to be able to take away understanding how important stabilizing the nervous system, strengthening the foundation of your body is, and sustaining your identity beyond that is because we do see a lot of overtraining and under recovering. And that is what I see a lot of my clients coming to me for because they were given poor advice. So now they've been overtraining, pushing through this injury, or worse, resting too much and not loading that specific area. And then they end up in pain and they end up deconditioning themselves and not in a place that feels good for them, that allows them to train the way that they want to. So I would love if you could take away from this conversation productive ways to rest. And
Wonderful. Yeah. That's a really great intention for our conversation. And you mentioned stabilizing the nervous system there. Do you have specific strategies or methods or explanation in terms of how we can do that?
Yeah, so everybody talks about nervous system stabilization and mindset work and meditation. And I found that obviously not one thing works the same for everybody. So the way that we focus on stabilizing the nervous system is honestly finding something that brings you joy and is a productive, restful activity. For example, that could look like getting outside and walking every day. That's my way of meditating and regulating my nervous system. I get out for a 30 to 60 minute walk every single day, even if it's cold. The fresh air, the sunlight works wonders on my mood, my energy, and thus my nervous system. Things like meditation are harder for me, as and maybe I should just practice more, but it doesn't work as well for me. So for me, my nature walks are the way that I stabilize my nervous system, the way that I take a break from screens, take a break from work. So it really does look different for everybody. I think the most common or the most frequently prescribed for my clients are daily sunlight and a screen bedtime. So putting the phones away 30 to 60 minutes before bed. And then third, finding an activity that you find enjoyable. So for some people, they do need to practice the meditation, but for some people, this looks like dancing for 10 minutes and just getting all that stuck energy out. For some people, this looks like going and playing the sport that you used to play in high school or college. So I think it really does vary person to person. Breath work is big for us too, but it's the same thing with training. It's whatever is go you're going to be consistent with. I know I'm not going to be consistent with meditation. I'll be consistent with my daily walks, right? So if you don't feel like you're going to be consistent with breath work, then breath work maybe isn't your forte, and maybe you should go do something else that's going to be more productive for you.
I think that's a really, really great point, and I love that you brought back up screen time as well. I think by now we've kind of like gotten into a little bit of a rut. There was like a wave where everybody was talking about, screen time or shutting off your phone and putting away devices at a certain time. And now I haven't heard people talk about this in a while, so I think it's super important, especially for anxiety. For me, I don't even think it's so much about the brightness of the screen. Yeah, that's a point, but some people even have blue light blockers or enable that gray function on the phone. But even though, or even if, even then, our brains are going to keep being active and going to respond to whatever we're seeing there. So simply not having any input at all is going to be most beneficial, that's for sure. Kind of going even more into your area of expertise, obviously with physiotherapy and pain management and so on. I saw a very interesting post that you put out, and that was stretching might be the worst thing for you to do if you're feeling tight. That really caught my attention because, like, I will be honest, I enjoy stretching and foam rolling post-workout. I'm well aware of the fact, though, that I'm mostly enjoying that because it's just some form of down regulation. I could probably just lay there for 15 minutes and it would do the exact same thing, sort of thing. But yeah, l please let's hear your take on this.
So again, I always go back to, if it feels good for you, I'm not going to tell you not to. If we're stretching for the wrong reasons, if we're stretching because we feel tight and we're complaining that we still feel tight no matter how much we stretch, it's not a stretching issue then. Clearly, stretching isn't the thing that's going to help you because you've been doing it and it's not working. Tightness is there, the real definition of tightness is your nervous system's reaction to. So again, we're going back to the nervous system here. If the nervous system feels unsafe, feels weak, feels unstable, it will send signals to that area to tighten up, to create tension, to protect the area. Think about when you feel stressed and you get really tense up here, right? You get tight. The muscles tense up. When you are bracing for impact, whether you're playing a sport like football players, when they smash into each other, they brace for the impact. If you were to get into a car accident, you brace for that impact. Boxing, you brace for impact, right? So when your nervous system is sensing danger, we will tense, we will brace for impact. So we need to actually provide safety. So that's where stabilizing the nervous system comes in and then strengthening. Because if we are weak or unstable, the nervous system feels unsafe in that area. So it will tense up and not let you move as far because it's trying to protect you and prevent injury. Whereas if we're strong there, you won't feel that tightness. Now there's also there's stiffness and there's shortness, and that's where it can also feel tight. But it's actually the muscle itself. Shortness typically only happens when there's actually the muscle shortens. That typically only happens like after a long period of being like in a cast. Like if somebody breaks their arm and they're in a cast for a long period of time, their biceps might actually be short. And now we actually do have to work on lengthening. Stiffness is temporary. Stiffness is where like you've been sitting on the couch for a long time, you get up and you're like, oh, I feel really stiff. And that's where stretching can actually be beneficial because you're temporarily stiff. But the tightness itself, this chronic tightness people are feeling, is not a stretching issue. To your point that foam rolling and stretching feel good and they help you downregulate, I actually typically have my clients foam roll in the beginning of the session because foam rolling temporarily increases muscle length. So now, when you go throughout your training session, you're actually able to access deeper ranges of motion. So that helps with the chronic tightness because now you're training through deeper ranges of motion, building strength through them. But if, again, if it makes you feel good after, you also still can. I have all my clients do 3 to 5 minutes of breath work at the end of their session for down regulation in various positions, whatever position I feel is best for them. But yes, that's my spiel on tightness. Stretching isn't necessarily bad or not useful at all. It's just that it is very nuanced, and I think that people stretch for the wrong reasons. They feel tight and they think I just need to stretch, and then they are chronically stretching.
Yeah, no, that's a really good distinction also between stiff and tight and like what types of tightness, so to speak. And I also think sometimes like forcing yourself into the stretch and like almost like pulling, you're like, you're missing the point, you know, like if you're breathing into it and you're just like allowing gravity to do the work and relaxing into that, that's a, in my opinion, that's what it should be like, because then we can achieve that sort of lengthening a little bit more. But if it's just like, oh, I need to get to my toes type of thing, that's just bound for something not good to happen. Another one of your posts caught my attention when you were saying that avoiding pain might be making it worse. I would like to hear what exactly you meant by that.
So it's interesting because I also just read a new research article that came out about this, about people with chronic pain and should you push into pain or not. And the article ultimately said it kind of depends. Now, pushing into a little bit of pain, a healthy amount of pain, which is about a 3 to 4 out of 10, that can do a couple of things. It can help make you stronger because if we're avoiding that range of motion or that movement because it's producing pain, now we're getting weaker in that position, in that movement. And if we are avoiding pain, then we're teaching ourselves that that movement is not safe. So again, this a nervous system thing. Your nervous system now, when you go, if you're afraid to deadlift because of your back and you're not deadlifting in the gym, now what happens when you go to bend over to pick something up? You're going to be very ginger with it. You're going to maybe say, I can't pick up that box and avoid doing it. So now you get weaker in that position. And when we avoid things that cause a little bit of pain or discomfort, now we are closing ourselves off to activities. And now our training menu or our activity menu is smaller and smaller and smaller. So you might want to go on that hike with your friends, but you're scared your body can't handle it because just the stairs bother you. But so you won't do step ups in the gym. So now when you go for a hike, that's really scary for you. So you won't do it. So now the pain grows outside of your physical pain. Now it's social pain. Now it's emotional pain because you're not engaging socially in the activities that you want to. Maybe training was an outlet for you and now you're not doing that anymore because it's painful. So now there's emotional pain. So that's what I mean by if we are avoiding things that cause pain, we can actually make the pain worse because we're going to get weaker. And in our life, we're not going to have as much fun. We're not going to be able to do as many things.
I really like that holistic long-term view on things, because yeah, I mean, chronic pain of any sort is super, super limiting. And to your point, there is quite a bit of research in from my knowledge as well, like demonstrating that a lot of chronic pain is not actually physiological anymore. It really is much more psychological. Or then, of course, if we're like avoiding certain movements, then we are maybe compensating for it in a poor way and just like unilaterally or something like that. And then the other side is developing some issues. So I think that's a really great point to, yeah, still address the pain. But like, what would be a guidance as to, okay, when is it too soon to lean into the pain? Like, should we lean into it right away? Or what might be a guidance as to like, when am I pushing too far and when what's a good measure?
Yeah, great question. So chronic pain is defined as anything more than 3 months. So if you've been dealing with pain for more than 3 months and avoiding things that cause pain for more than 3 months, then we can probably start to push into it a little bit. Maybe we're not going up to that 3 to 4 out of 10 because you are too scared. And fear does play a role in our decision making on how much pain we're going to push into. Because again, what happens when you're fearful? We tense. So if we're tense and we're trying to push into something, we can also make that thing worse. So reducing the fear around the movement and really starting with an entry point that feels comfortable for the client, we like to like push the edge of discomfort. So we're not going to go from 0 to 100. We're going to see how can we like nudge the edge of this activity is uncomfortable for you, but not so uncomfortable that you're going to tense up and cause more damage, or that you're going to experience too much pain that you're scared to do it again. So we'll find, like, for a deadlift, there's so many other deadlifting variations that we could do, right? We can play around with tempo, range of motion, load. You can find a variation of a movement pattern as that introduction. If you have an acute injury, which we work mainly with people who have chronic pain. But if you have an acute injury, we don't necessarily want to push into pain right away because we do need the tissues to heal. The idea behind chronic pain is that after 3 months, the tissues are healed. We are not going to do more damage to those tissues. If we have an acute injury, there is the possibility that we do. So, with an acute injury, I would handle that differently. I wouldn't recommend that those people are pushing into pain right now. They do need the healing piece first, and then later stage rehab, we can start to toe the line a little bit.
Gotcha. Okay, cool. Thank you for reiterating that. And I know that you have a free guide on all things mobility, and I'm definitely going to link that in the show notes so people can check that out as a form of injury prevention or, to the point of stretching that we made earlier. One of the most common, maybe not necessarily injuries, but like complaints that I often hear about is low back pain. And I would love to hear from you. What are some of the main root causes? Is it often linked to like too heavy lifting in the gym or improper form, or is it more lifestyle things like, I don't know, stress or whatever else? What is it
Yeah.
that you most commonly see?
There's a couple. So I do tend to see a heightened nervous system. That's definitely one of the ones that we see for chronic back pain. There's actually a ton of research that links chronic back pain with stress. So when we see high levels of stress, we do want to address that. However, I never only address stress because I never want my client to feel like I'm telling them it's all in your head. It's all in your nerve. Because that's what sometimes they hear when you talk about the nervous system. They think, oh, all in my head. But that's not, it, low back pain is not always just psychological. There is a degree of, I see a lack of thoracic mobility. So when we have limited thoracic rotation, then we have reduced rotational capacity and force transfer, which then influences the spinal load distribution. So now we can dump more into the back. Same thing if we have limitations in hip range of motion or hip strength, then we dump into the back. Even ankle range of motion, if we're lacking ankle dorsiflexion, then if we can restore foot mechanics, then we can improve kinetic sequencing up the chain. So there's I want to say that most often, I'll start with this. The mistake I used to make when I was working in person physical therapy is I would do glute work and core work for the low back all the time because I said low back pain is just instability and we just need more stability. And I would do that without actually testing the person to know are their glutes and core actually weak? Whereas now my team and I have a whole battery of assessments that we do with our clients to make sure we do get to the root cause. I will say though, a lack of posterior chain strength and a lack of hip rotation range of motion, both internal or external, are very common when I see chronic low back pain. My guess as to why is not necessarily that those things maybe caused the pain, but because we developed the pain, then we backed off on things like squats and deadlifts. So now the posterior chain became deconditioned.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. And I don't know if you have seen that or if you are seeing that also, but nowadays with the message of like, let's lift heavy, which I'm totally behind. You know that's a great message overall to have, but I think sometimes it gets pushed a little bit too much so that we constantly think I need to always lift heavy no matter what, and so we become too numbers focused and not enough activation focused, in my opinion. And I'll expand a bit on that from a personal perspective, is because that was used to be my mindset coming from like a little bit of a CrossFit background, and was like, oh, I need to push the numbers, and this is what I progressive overload, all those good things. And I didn't realize that I really didn't lift that much or activate my glutes at all, really. So just lifting or compensating with other muscles. And of course, eventually that resulted in sort of like sciatic pain issues. And since then, I have seen so many more women struggling with the same thing where they're like, I felt like I should be progressively overloading and need to lift heavier and heavier without actually making sure that we're also addressing those weaknesses along the way or doing more unilateral work and so on. Is that a pattern that you can, or is that something that you see amongst your clients also?
I will say for the most part, my clients are coming to me more fearful
Right.
of that. So maybe in the past they had pushed, but they're coming to me deconditioned, not really doing that. However, I will speak to that my own experience, and I do have clients who are all or nothing, who do like to push the needle and do a little bit more. And I have had to talk them out of that mindset. That's another big piece of what we do. Nervous system, mindset, they go together. And the mindset aspect of working on it doesn't need to be all or nothing. And that's what my client, they were all first, then they got hurt, and then they became nothing. That
Got
sounds
it.
really bad. They didn't become nothing.
No, I know what you mean. I'm sure
But you know what I
people
mean?
know
They
what
started
it
with this,
is.
like they were like all in, and then they got hurt, and then it was like, okay, full stop. So then they start working with me. But I think what I see a lot in the bodybuilding population, I've had a couple new clients come on recently who are old, like past bodybuilders and moms, and now switching their focus from bodybuilding and even just like building up, glutes and a nice body. Like they're more focused on function now. And they're like, I want to be able to run a marathon with my daughter if I feel like. I want to be able to go hiking with the family and not worry about things. And then when I assess them, I do notice that, okay, the glutes and the quads are built up really nice, but our hip adductors, our abductors, those are a little weaker. Our deep hip rotators are weaker. We see like rotator cuff is weak because we're not working on those small, minute details, right? If we're bodybuilding, we're like, and for the most part, I don't want to generalize too much, but like lateral raises, shoulder raises, leg extension, leg curls, squat, deadlift. But then what about like rotation? A lot of bodybuilders are only training in the frontal and the sagittal planes, and we miss the rotation. So that's another big thing I have to teach up with a lot of these women. So I think that's where the, lifting too heavy or being too focused on progressive overload, not enough focused on how good you feel or how you're functioning in daily life can definitely be detrimental.
Yeah, I really try to encourage people to every now and then work with a trainer, even if it's just a single session or, like for a month or something like that. And that trainer could also be like a physiotherapist in that setting. Because I do think even if we have been working out for a decade, two, three, whatever it is, if we're pretty fit, we feel like we have a good idea. And many of the listeners or of our clients also are actually coaches and trainers themselves. But I believe having an external eye on, first of all, your movement patterns, and second of all, an external opinion on is my training program really also addressing my weaknesses is so helpful. And just simply following like a generic program online doesn't do that. They're called generic for a reason. And just simply always doing your own programming. Likewise, you're gonna do the things that you enjoy doing mostly, or maybe you are a person who also actually digs into their weaknesses. But generally speaking, I think it's just so valuable having some external input at least every now and then. Yeah, I guess going a little bit further into the recovery aspect, and I just love how much you are also pointing towards, hey, rest is important for recovery and for making progress. But you also talk about nutrition for healing. Maybe you can give us your main foundations on that pillar.
Yeah, so a lot of the women that I work with also come in under eating and not intentionally. Some of them are tracking, but just can't seem to get their intake up for whatever reason. Some don't even know about macro tracking, and we teach them macro tracking. I think tracking macros is a very great tool. I did have an eating disorder in high school, and tracking macros at first was not good for me. I was always trying to, like, I was like celebrating I was under 1,000 calories for the day, right? But then it healed me because it allowed me to see how much I could eat and still feel really good and look good and not, become bulky. Like this was like years ago, and it was like lifting makes you bulky. I know some women still believe that, and that breaks my heart, but so I really believe that tracking macros gives you insight into food that you wouldn't typically have if you didn't track. So we help our clients learn how to eat more, because if we're not eating enough, especially on protein, I can give you the best training program in the world and it's not going to work. Because training in the gym breaks your muscles down and they rebuild when you rest. And if they don't have the proper resources to rebuild when you rest, then they probably won't, right? So that's the first piece. And then the second piece with chronic pain, we also typically see a level of chronic inflammation. So I encourage my clients to adopt an anti-inflammatory diet. Because of my history of an eating disorder, and I know, the detrimental things on the internet, I don't tell my clients not to eat things. I provide education around gluten, dairy, and alcohol, and suggest that we reduce the intake of those things while we're healing. And then I also introduce more anti-inflammatory foods like polyphenols, like berries, omega-3s, things like that, and help intro and then I also introduce like magnesium and other nutrients, like specifically micronutrients that are going to help their healing journey.
Yeah, amazing. I think I agree with everything that you just said, including the we need to provide our body with actual building blocks or to with the building stones if we want to recover an injury or connective tissue and all of that, and build muscle, of course, also. And I love that you're not advocating for anything restrictive or cutting things out. It's always so helpful to put a positive focus, like what should we do be doing more of, as opposed to just fear mongering and pointing out all the things we can't be doing. That automatically puts a negative spin on things. That's for sure. And so, like you also mentioned, some of the people that you do work with, they have a bit more of like an obsessive kind of background or are just high stress kind of people. What are some strategies that you use to get them to quote unquote buy in, and I don't mean it like that, but like to subscribe to, hey, rest is helpful. Because I think mentally, type A people, myself included, also, we have a hard time like just chilling and not feeling guilty about that, or feeling like, it's only a productive day if you fall into bed completely exhausted.
For sure. So, couple of things. One, the main thing is providing education. We do a lot of education outside of just our one-on-one. We also do group calls every week where we educate on some topic. And we often talk about nervous system regulation, why it's important, break down the science. My clients are the type of clients who also like to know the why. And if they really understand the why and understand and the research and the science behind it, they're more likely to buy in. So I always make sure that they have that level of education. And then second, sometimes they just have to experience it themselves. Sometimes they just have to, go through a period where they're maybe not resting and feeling not great, and then saying like, okay, let's give it a try. And then they do it and then they feel better. And they're like, oh, and they're like, what do you think changed? Oh, well, I actually started to rest a little bit more or incorporate more of the nervous system techniques, like whatever. So it's a combination of education and experience. You can't always just tell people exactly what to do and expect them to follow exactly. And I also find if you build it into their program, like a way that you can give people rest without making them feel like it's actually rest is I'll actually put in their workout program outdoor walk, and I'll say focus on nasal breathing only. So it is part of their protocol, so they're more likely to do it. And then it's active, so they feel like they're, doing something, and they are, but then it's also like an active rest.
That I like that strategy. I think that's very practical and a good little mindset trick. I think I would be able to be tricked that way as well. So yeah, no, very good point. Also, in the point of education first, and to that point, I saw something else that you spoke about, and that was around MRIs. So you mentioned, let's just say if something shows up on your MRI, like a small tear or something like that, it might be easy for people to get freaked out. And from what I remember, I believe your post was kind of like, don't panic quite yet. Like it's not what it might not be what it seems to be. Can you explain what you meant by that?
Yeah, so there are over 50% of the population has something. Disc herniations, hip labral tears, shoulder labral tears, rotator cuff tears, meniscal tears. And they live normal, healthy, active lives without symptoms. Some people do have these findings and do have symptoms. So we're speaking to two different populations here. Some people with hip labral tears will require surgery. Some people with meniscal tears will require surgery. Some people with arthritis will require a knee replacement, right? But I think that if we can get you into a rehab and strength program before we reach that point of I need surgery, then you have a really good chance of not needing surgery just because of an MRI finding. So, like, we can't image pain. I have a hip labral tear on my right side. The only reason I found that out was because I do notice some clicking in my hip when I move into certain positions. And when I was in PT school, we were doing hip labral tear tests, and they were all positive on me. And then for gigs, I was like, let me just go get an MRI and see, and it was there. And it didn't really give me issues. Like, I do get clicking, and sometimes I get a little bit of like achiness in the hip, but it's never so painful that it holds me back from anything. So I've never even considered surgery. I have a lot of clients who come in with hip labral tears wanting to avoid surgery, and I've never had anybody leave my container and need surgery. Because we can typically, whatever's causing the pain is whatever caused the tear in the first place. It's not necessarily the labrum causing the pain. It's whatever caused that. So, was it that the tear is in the right side? The left side is stronger. So, maybe that's why, because the right side's weaker, the right side developed the hip labral tear. Now we need to build up strength on the right side, or vice versa. Is the left side weaker, the right side stronger? Now the right side has taken on most of the load. So now we need to build the left side to offload the right side, and that reduces pain. So you really can't image pain. You can see what's going on. Even like my dad has been dealing with chronic pain for a while. He doesn't listen to me. Finally, the other day, he's like, "I am so sick of being in pain. I will do whatever you tell me to." And I'm like,
Amazing.
"Great, let's get to work." But he recently had an MRI, and he was like, "This all sounds really scary." And I'm like, "Nope. It's basically just saying that you're old." I'm
Yeah.
like, there's just some degeneration. It's all good. And he was like, that sounds really scary. And I'm like, but your back isn't having pain. And your back isn't like that is not causing your hip pain. So there's obviously nuance to it. I'm not going to say that everybody can avoid surgery with MRI findings, but MRI findings are not the end all be all. I actually just had a client who came in for hip pain, and she already had like an MRI scheduled for her back. I didn't want her to have it because this is what happened. She got the MRI, she found out she had herniated discs in her back, and now all of a sudden she's regressing and her back hurts more. And she even said to me, this might be a psych, like, is this a psychological thing? Because once I found out, and I said, yes. And this is why sometimes imaging makes things worse.
Yeah, I really think that's a great point because to what we said earlier in regards to mindset, like just how what we believe about things matters so much. And not just that, it's like auto-suggestive almost to our body. So yeah, very, very important information. Thank you for sharing that. And yeah, Samantha, I'm just generally curious what excites you at the moment. What do you have in the pipelines, whether that be for your business or like maybe personal training goals or in the research, what's something that excites you?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think right now, I just had a baby. I have a 2-month-old.
Congratulations. Yeah.
Thanks.
You
So
look pretty well rested, I might
I think right now what's really exciting me is tapping a little bit more into that population who is moms and shifting their focus away from, bodybuilding and more so function and how do I function better with my children and make sure that I do live a long, healthy life and still, look hot while doing it. So I think it's exciting me to be able to now resonate with an entirely different population. And there's a deeper why behind it too. Like I also just brought on a new woman who is a mother of three and she has back pain. She's like, it's hard for me to even pick up my toddler. And that is emotionally taxing on a mother. Like I couldn't imagine not being able to lift and hang out with my 2-month-old, and carry her around. Usually she's on my front and some women can't do that because they're in pain and I want to be able to give that to them. So I think that this new mom era is really exciting me, and just we've brought on 10 new women in the last like 3 weeks. So just really excited about how we're growing and the amount of women that we're reaching, specifically moms, runners, that population has just been really, really fun to work with and watch the company evolve this year. So we don't really have too much going on the end of the year. We're going to do a little Black Friday sale, and we're going to do every year in December, we pick a charity and we donate a portion of our proceeds too. So that'll be really all that's coming up the end of the year. And I'm excited to see what I come up with for 2026 because I don't know yet.
Well, I love it. I think it sounds like you have your hands full, literally, with your baby as well. So, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day. I really hope people go and check out at least your free mobility guide. Of course, I will link everything in the show notes. And yeah, truly a pleasure speaking with you.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Lisa.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Samantha. Thank you so much for tuning in. Go and give us both a follow. And remember, if you want help with your nutrition and fitness goals, we'd love to guide you. One more thing before you go, if you're looking for premium supplements, our partner Fat Muscle Project has got you covered. Head to their website for the best protein powders, creatine, vitamin D, and more. And feel free to use our code NCL for your chance to win a $250 gift card every month. Thank you for listening.